It's planting season, and it's not too late to make sure your crops grow up fed and happy. Regardless of your spring crop, Fed and Happy offers a variety of worm-casting solutions in liquid and solid form to supercharge your soil, your yields, and your profitability. For fast, vibrant germination and seedling growth, mix your seed with Fed and Happy's screened granular castings pre-drilling. The Fed and Happy liquid seed treat and extracts offer the ideal mix of soluble solids loaded with living beneficial biology, mycorrhizal fungi, humates, and more. The Fed and Happy small spreadable castings are ideal for fast, easy soil incorporation. The large offer long-term stability and soil growth. But you don't have to figure this out on your own. Just call 833-GO-WORMS to speak with our farm team experts for a fast turnaround on a custom solution for your needs. Fare better against pests, disease, drought, and other potential hazards this season with Fed and Happy worm castings. Visit fedandhappy.com for a healthy harvest and any lawn, garden, and tree care needs. Available for pickup and on-farm delivery. That's fedinhappy.com. Or call 833-GO-WORMS. Happy planting.
Welcome. You're listening to Casually Baked, the podcast. Home base for the can of curious. Thanks for tuning in.
It's a hard time. We had a hard time. Together. Together. Yes, it's a hard time. We had a hard time.
Together. Hi, y'all. I'm Joe, your host and cannabis lifestyle guide. If you pay attention to cannabis news, then you've already heard that Circle K convenience stores have partnered with Chicago-based corporate cannabis giant Green Thumb Industries to bring cannabis to gas stations in Florida in the new year. Now, you won't be able to just walk into a Circle K and buy weed while you're pumping gas, though that's what headline readers might think. 10 locations will be operated by GTI as independent medical dispensaries called Rise Express. There will be a separate entrance into the dispensary, and customers must show their Florida medical cannabis card to enter. And Circle K is fired up and ready to roll this deal out in other states. To me, this is foreshadowing for the massive takeover of sacred plant medicine by the corporate behemoths. Is it good to have cannabis in highly visible locations? Certainly. But it's equally as imperative to preserve the history and culture of cannabis and to understand the ramifications of corporatizing cannabis and the trade-off of quality for quantity. Deals like this undermine the small legacy cannabis farmers who got this party started, who've spent generations growing the plant honorably in harmony with nature. Some of you might call me alarmist, but we're already watching history get whitewashed before our eyes. And I personally know cannabis farmers who are unsure if they can afford to stay in the game another growing season. So today, you and I are making a trip up the mountain to talk with a couple of cannabis farmers about the hard work, hardships, and ingenuity of staying relevant in an industry that's going off the rails. I visited Teddy and Reggie of Canna Country Farms in Humboldt County, California, at the beginning of harvest season. We talk about the timing of harvesting flower and the effects that has on the high. We discuss cannabis genetics, energy use in cannabis cultivation, indoor versus full-term sun-grown, and other small factors that add up to a big difference. And because growing cannabis is only half the process, we discuss drying and curing techniques for you newbies and at-home growers. But first, a word from our sponsor, MJ Relief, the muscle rub PhD formulated for what aches and pains you. And this week, we're celebrating a huge win for one of our first beta customers. On October 8th, 2022, Tom DeBrun earned the title of Ironman World Champion. Now, this is a guy who wasn't much of a swimmer and didn't even own a bike 7 years ago. Tom plays hard, trains hard, and knows the importance of muscle recovery. So in the early days, we had him test out MJ Relief, and this is what he said. Quote, I've been using this muscle rub for several months, and I love it. It has successfully helped me with sore muscles and little aches resulting from my demanding Ironman triathlon training. I would recommend this muscle rub to anyone. It's one of the most effective CBD-based formulations on the market. End quote. MJ is strong enough for performance athletes like Tom and gentle enough for sensitive skin like mine. Head over to MJSkinRelief.com to learn more and to purchase a tin or tube for your own gym bag. Use promo code CASUALLYBAKED to save 10% on your order. And if you're listening on your phone, scroll down in the podcast app you're using to see the episode notes where you'll find links to this offer and more from other Casually Baked partner brands. Shopping podcast affiliates is a win-win because you saving money on the things you want supports the production of this show. And if you're picking up what I'm putting down, please rate and review Casually Baked the podcast on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. That one small action helps other canna curious folks find this highly responsible cannabis content. Now let's go to canna country and explore our favorite plant through the experience of farmers whose bond with cannabis and the land runs three generations deep. Not only do we discuss the farming and business of cannabis, but also the tough conversations and family sacrifice involved in maintaining this way of life. So smoke 'em if you got 'em and settle in. It's time to get casually baked.
It's high time. We had a high time together.
So I would like to talk about, first start out your relationship and how y'all have created your little canna country team, what y'all are focusing on, to give us an idea of the behind the scenes stuff. It's not just growing weed.
Oh, it's two friends that were mutually brought together by other people in the community, and then having the opening of legalization also with the Humboldt County's like task force of letters out to everybody who still has hoops up that are trying to make a living. And Reggie was working for one of those people, and we came together here. I had an opportunity, and we just decided to work together, and we've always been friends, and we always loved the plant. So for us, it was, you know, always about the plant. So it was an immediate connection.
How long have y'all been working together?
Like 4 years.
Yeah. Now? Intensively.
Yeah.
More intensively. He's of course on the mountain all the time. And we did a big breeding project that we're still filtering through since then. And so now we're still making seeds, but doing it more in a commercial way of like, we've done the pheno hunting and now it's making seeds to get out to the people. And we're always concerned with establishing our IP and protecting it with the foresight of getting it to people that then want to pay for that and commercialize it themselves, for instance.
Being a Humboldt farmer that, you know, this is your whole life. You've lived here. This is what you've done. Are these steps the steps you know that you have to take in order to continue this way of life? Or is this just like what excites you and has taken you down that path?
Well, that's a little of both. It is exciting. Pheno hunting wasn't something I was doing. The reason we got into that, or I think the reason that we got into that was, for me, I was really tired of chasing the new strain, the named strain, the popular strain. And it so often changed that you'd finally get the cut that you wanted and plant it. And now that wasn't the thing everybody wanted. So we're just constantly chasing what's new, what's the hype strain, what can we get that we know will sell. And just seeing the the little bit of the future and what's going on with the herb situation, we opted to not go down the mainstream and do what everyone else was doing. And so Reggie came up and we got together a game plan of some different crosses that we wanted to try out. And so that just evolved into making 305 different strains 1 year up here. And then it takes a long time to categorize them, put them away, dry them, store them, and then crack those seeds and try and get those phenos out that we know that they're in there. We just have to crack the seeds and find them. So it was just not going down the mainstream and trying to find what started us out, what we liked. Basically, instead of chasing what someone else liked, we were decided that let's breed something that we like, even though we know that could really affect the way the farm works. Because if we don't have something that someone wants, then now we're really trying to promote something that no one knows about. But it also was like, you can die slowly by chasing the dragon or trying to find the strain. You can hopefully sell, and it's getting harder and harder and harder to sell and harder to find that strain. Or we can go back to our roots and what we used to do, taking what someone else has created and trying to do better with it and come up with something new. So that was kind of our like idea of getting into this.
So then that 1 year when you said like 305 different varietals, what so that kicked off this ride that you're now on. So now 4 years later, how many of those are you focusing on? How's your trajectory changed because of that?
We cracked so far into 49 of the envelopes, and it was 305 just seed mothers, but then there was like 25 different name brand public domain clones as well. At least there was SFV and Gelato and Skittles and even
D-Lime and
yep,
Do-Si-Do and
yep, and all sorts of different things. So we've kept 11 keepers out of the 49 different envelopes that we opened up.
Okay.
One out of 9 different ones and 2 out of the Forbidden Cherimoya, which is the number 26, the 26th envelope to get opened up.
Okay, that's how the numbers came about.
Yeah, basically we had 305, and as Reg was putting them into envelopes, he was writing down number one and whatever that cross was. And so that's how we opened them up. We opened up not by the number, picking the number, but picking the lineage. And like, what do we want to play with this year? Let's get some blueberries. Let's get some of the key limes. Let's get some of the SFEs, and let's crack those phenos out and see what comes out of them. So that was kind of how it started.
New faces on recognizable names. And it's something unique to the environment here and adapted more to here is what our goal is. Bioregionally acclimated genetics.
Yeah. And talking about number 26, that forbidden fruit to me is one of the most recognizable terpene profiles. And so like just standing outside and being near that garden number one, that smell just kind of comes over you, and it's such a beautiful fragrance. So what are the things that you like about the ones y'all are really focusing on right now?
They've all had to smoke really good. Like that's the final make it or break it. That's the weeks we spend on R&D is coming up with the kill list first. And it's those ones that didn't match our smoking quality and user experience that we're after. And then we're like, oh, how does it grow? You know, it's like, okay, we look at our resistance notes. Yep.
Yeah. What's the structure like of the flower? What's the plant structure like? What's the timing like on it? Is it a late one? Is it early? Just all of the things, all of the different faces of the phenos that come out. So
I can imagine that something might smoke really well, but might be a pain in the ass to grow. Then what do you do?
26, she grows good, but there's a lot of like factors. The keeper of the 2020 pheno hunt, she grows like a fountain. She grows up to fall down. She like doesn't care. There's very little structure. On structure of 1 to 5, it was like a 1.
Yeah, oh yeah,
absolute just support needed.
Jungle. She just grow and fall over, grow up and fall over, grow up and fall over.
She twists at maturity. She like faces down and she's a train wreck morphology where she doesn't change her leaves or anything. She just keeps growing straight, but she's facing the ground. Versus the 2019 version has way more form, holds itself up like a normal plant, looks like a better
harder,
bud.
Bigger bud, better structure.
Crystallier. Yep.
Different, a little different hair look, but and a different bud structure, and the plant has smaller leaves. And it's really similar, but totally different all at the same time.
Okay, so then if that's the number 26 in 2019 versus 2020, then does all of a sudden, does it get a new number?
26 plant A, no, 8 yeah. versus 26 plant 24, but that's the 26 everybody knows these days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think I saw something on your Instagram page where you had one of those flowers. You put it on a plate and just added a little water to it.
Oh, yeah.
To just like see that bright purple color just come pouring out of it. It was so pretty.
That was discovered when we went fishing one time on my buddy's boat, and I'm rolling one up in his cabin, and you know, it's windy and it's wet and it's the ocean. So I get it twisted up. The wind blows a little bit. Some of the weed falls on the floor, and I get the joint rolled. All right, great. We go out on the deck, and we're smoking it. We're catching fish, and we're running back and forth from the cabin. And we look down, and it's the little bit of herb that blew off of the tray is on the floor, and it's bleeding down the white deck purple. And this was just with salt water. And so we were like, whoa, holy crap, you know. I knew it was kind of bleed through the paper, but I'd never gotten it wet. And it on white floor, it was just this purple wine just cascading down the floor. And everyone was just like, wow, what the hell is that? And so I decided to take, actually Reggie had made some pollen, and we had pollinated a branch, and I was pulling the seeds out of it and crushing it up. And then I decided, well, I'm not going to smoke that, but let me see what it does with some water. And so I put that on Instagram, and it was just like wine coming out of it. It's really cool. And I want to try and find that to keep that in and make hash, to kind of find a hash process that keeps that color in it. I don't know if it's out there, but that's my goal.
When you were saying that, I'm like, oh my God, that would be beautiful hash.
Yeah, I hope to find it someday. There's some maker out there that'll take that and make it into something beautiful and special. I know it.
Yeah.
Just got to find it.
So, you know, we are at harvest season. Things are happening, and there's a lot of at-home gardeners that finally have some plants that they're excited about, and then they're just hesitating because they don't know when to take them. And we were talking earlier about there really are ramifications of taking a plant early or a little bit later. So will you educate us on all of that?
Well, what I've seen for like an early harvest maximizes flavor, and this is within the window of ripe. It maximizes the storability, but that's a function, again, of how you store it. And it's often a racier, quicker high that has less duration. And then at some point in the harvest window, the terpenes turn a little bit more resinous through the joint and not as flavorful for the whole joint. But the high is much longer and a little more subdued. It's kind of the rocket ship high, that early high.
Yeah.
And some people don't like it because it makes their heart race.
Yeah, it is an uppity high. And I think the longer it stays in the ground, the better terps that come out of it. And also, I think it has a little better storage myself. But that's just personal.
Well, and how do you see that? What are you looking at structurally of the flower before you get out your like jeweler's loop?
Yeah. Well, outdoor, it's often conditions permitting. And so depending on your environment, if you're in a moldier environment, like towards the coast, you often don't have the luxury of leaving it as long. Where Canna Country is a very special microclimate because it's got some coastal impression, is like a little more moisture in the air, but compared to the coast, it's very dry and cooler and hotter. And so you've got a lot more leeway for leaving a plant in the ground, for instance. And so really, like if you start seeing, like when I use the scope It's not to see the resin glands, because that's a process that will continue after you harvest it, as long as you're not damaging it, and it'll still mature over the next few weeks. Like the resin, the crystals will apparently come out, but I'm looking for potential mold spores and stuff in there. So it's conditions permitting when you're a sun-grown farmer.
So you might not have a chance to leave it in like we do and let it go to full maturity. But you're looking at some of the hairs and the color, and if they're coming through with new ones, or if it's completely done, there's not another hair coming in. Now you're full potential, you know, your full maturity at that point. So just kind of looking at, depending on the strain as well, your density, your mold factors. There's a lot of factors to factor in to see if you can have to cut early or can let it go full term.
Hairs can be quite deceiving depending on the time of year and the crop that you're running.
And the weather. You get rain, you're going to have those hairs damaged, and they're going to look done, and they're probably not done. They've just been kind of beat on for a minute. So
the classic Humboldt test, I called it the Humboldt dick finger test, where they just squeeze a bud. And when I first came, I was a little offended, like dick finger in the bud, but it works for Humboldt County. If it can't get any harder, it won't get any harder.
Exactly. It's done.
Fair enough. That's a pretty good visual. We all get it. And I think it's fascinating how the smoke is different. Like, I didn't know that, but I have smoked things before that I feel make me racier, but I just always assumed that was the terpene profile. I didn't know that there's an added layer of nuance that had to be from the maturity of the plant when it was harvested.
I wonder if it is. It could be the terpene to cannabinoid ratio even. To me, because it's lower cannabinoids but a higher terpene ratio at that point, and then a lot of the terpenes.
Yeah, but that's interesting, because we had that test done with the DEP and the full term, and the terpene profile was way less than the full
in the
term.
Short season pots,
and it was pulled where I like it. I didn't let it go to full maturity where it's molding and it's done. I wanted it at its peak hardness and also at its peak smell. And I thought, well, I nailed it. And then we tested it, and it was
40% less.
It was a lot different, you know? So there's that too, that, you know, you'd just be blown away by a short-term, full-term.
Yeah, full-term spectrum. In the ground versus a soilless or a peat-based soil mix in a container. Yeah, big time difference.
Huge, huge difference.
Well, and there's... You maybe met him, because I know Johnny Casale at Huckleberry Hill Farms was working with, I think the guy's a chemist on
Colin
the East
Knuckles.
Coast. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We know Colin. Yeah. He does a lot of testing for us.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
I mean.
He's an amazing guy.
And the stats don't lie.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. There's a lot of terpene profiles that California doesn't test for. That's one of the things that he likes to point out, and we agree. You know, if a plant's dominant in its terpenes and it's not getting tested for it, then it's not potentially getting the information that it needs. You know,
people basing buying decisions on COAs is just ridiculous, and he points it out.
COAs are restricted to only a certain terpene profile,
or even cannabinoid profile too, like. The incomplete picture they're portraying is something.
It's something
complete.
That you have to buy by, but it's not actually have all the information in it.
Well, and you know, that's the nature of this legal cannabis market that we live in, where we have an oversupply of flower and not enough places that are able to sell it. You know, I mean, it's like they create problems.
Or there are places that just get paid to have shelf space. A lot of big brand, so quality doesn't matter. If you are a Nike fan, or I don't know if you can, whatever, then you're gonna go look for that, you know, no matter what, you're gonna buy it. And so if you're not Nike, you're gonna have a hard time getting it out there to people, because there are the big brands that are paying for the shelf space and for bud tenders to push it. They get incentives and or vacation or whatever. And so you're going to go in as a consumer not knowing maybe what you want, and you want to hear what the bud tender has to say. Well, they're going to push their brand on you before anything else.
Well, and this is the problem that I have with all of the celebrity brands. The majority of them probably don't know shit about the flower that their name gets put on. Though I'm sure they went to the farm and glad-handed folks and smoked a joint or two. But for me, I'm just like, I don't give a shit what Chelsea Handler is smoking.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I want sun-grown flower, and I want to have those choices when I go into a dispensary. But there's so many people that haven't had the luxury of visiting farms and having full-term cannabis like I have. And so then they don't know to ask for that stuff, or what they see in the store, they think this must be the best shit.
Right. Well, sun-grown has just gotten a bad name in California right now. If it's not a hype thing to talk about, it's not talked about. So it seems like indoors rapped about, indoors talked about, and that's what people are seeing, like THC, the things that are really getting shout out to them is what they're hearing. So I can't blame them. They're just uneducated.
Well, how is sun-grown getting a bad name when we know how much energy is used to make indoor cannabis?
I think it's not that it's a bad name. I think that they're just pushing indoor so much that it's just crowding it out. I don't know that anyone has anything bad to say about it, except for it doesn't look like indoor. But people who smoke it get higher off of it than indoor. And it's a way better product for you to smoke. There's no sprays here on the farm, and it's grown in the environment that we're in, which is, you know, a living ecosystem versus a noisy, light fan hydroponically grown with salts. So there's a big difference in living soil and the environment, your terroir that you're in, the water that you give it. You know, a lot of those places probably have chlorine in the water and things they're watering off of the city water, and all those little things add up to a lot. And in the end, we're rainwater catchment. We're off grid here, completely solar. We've been working our soil for 12 years and we're coming up with strains nobody has. And we're not naming our strains, they're numbers. And so we're just trying to go a different route than the mainstream is. And so we're going to get noticed at some point, but it's the majority still mainstream. And as soon as they can see that we branched off, then other people might follow, and you never know.
Yeah. Well, I applaud what y'all are doing here. And you recently mentioned that you had gotten the license to have your own commercial greenhouse nursery. And I think Washington State's already like kind of teed up the interstate commerce thing when federal legalization happens. I just read that Newsom did something similar in California. So teeing up these states to be able to get these genetics and this flower to other places so that the Emerald Triangle, Southern Humboldt, the things that do make Canna Country special will then be able to be shared elsewhere. So is that something that with this new license, will you be able to then be an interstate player, or are they going to create some other fucking license to have to do that? Do y'all know that yet?
I have no idea.
No, I've only seen one proposal of being able to cross state lines, but it was direct to consumer sales for small farms once it goes federally legal. Right now, I don't think anybody can.
Well, no, you can't do it yet, but, you know, it's just one of those things where when you are a small family farm, you are having to think three and four steps ahead so that you can...
Well, that's why we have our nursery license now. First of all, it takes forever to get it. And so we applied 2 years ago for it because this is what you're saying, like we have to be steps ahead. And so what did we see coming? Flower losing its power, genetics gaining some momentum. With the flower, there's really only so many avenues you can go down, and they've been pinched off. So as soon as the flower wasn't in demand, now everybody's trying to figure out how to preserve it. So now hash has gone. Everybody put it into hash, and everybody put it into oil, and now, so all those are flooded. So everything is flooded. There's no more avenues to go. So what are we going to do? We're going to go work on genetics, even though there are probably people thinking the same thing and doing it. We didn't see a big race to that yet, but knew it was coming, so we wanted to start it and get those genetics going and enter them into contests and see how people react to them. And so far, we've got a couple of Emerald Cup placings and Breeders' Cup awards, and we're going to start entering into more contests just to widen the profile of it. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, you got to play those games, get the publicity. And I think another big hurdle, too, is just educating the consumer market on the importance of good genetics and, you know, growing their own flower and creating their own medicine. Because it's like, if I can't get what I want from a dispensary, then I'll just get the seeds that I want and grow it myself. But I feel like for the average Joe, that seems like, wow, that's challenging. That's a hard thing to do, to grow weed. But
I love when people do it, because they usually come back and say, damn, I didn't know it was so tough, especially to make it perfect. Well, we're trying to preserve a perishable here in its perfectness.
Well, most people have been told about weed farmers, you just throw it in the ground and you just get its money tree. And it's so not that way.
No.
Johnny at Huckleberry Hill Farm has a really good idea. He has his puck that he puts a seed in. And so for a rookie, let's say, or a greenhorn that wants to go in and try and, you know, get a strain and grow it, it's a great idea. You have your seed and your puck right there's your start. And then, you know, other people have talked about other things. I won't mention packs of things because I don't want to step on any toes. But it's going to get easier for people that want to grow to just grow on their patio or, you know, somewhere. If they're just in an apartment, they get a little sun, they can shove it outside on their little porch and grow their little plant. And, you know, so that's coming. I think more and more people want to do it, even if they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. And I did get some of those pucks.
Cool.
So one thing that I'm asking people about is, what genetics do I need to be growing in a super hot climate that doesn't get cool relief at night? Because everything that I love to smoke is grown up in these parts. And I'm like, this is not what my environment is now.
Lake County. Ask the guys in Lake County, because it doesn't cool down as much at night there either. And okay, so we have a list of things that we know make it.
Okay. I know a few folks in Lake County. You know, we were talking indoor versus sun grown. I want to talk a little bit about kilowatt hours, the amount of energy it takes to grow cannabis indoors, along with the fact that, you know, plants are sentient beings. And if you've got like somebody playing death metal as they're watering the plants or whatever, there's so many factors that I think play into making one superior to the other. But the thing that's so big right now is everybody's concerned about energy, and we need to move to electric cars. And in the cannabis world, to me, that's sucking all of the energy out of the process. So you're involved in some of this stuff. You can articulate it better than I am. Tell me what...
To figure out the grams per kilowatt hour is like a functional thing to, like, because not all indoors are created the same, and there's a lot of choices on all sorts of equipment and where you're doing it, how much you need to do for cooling the room or heating the rooms or drying the rooms. And so there's a lot of choices, and there's like software that's making it easier, plug and play, so you can actually see the ramifications of all the different choices. But it also boils down to your methods of like how much yield you're getting, of course, for the amount of space you're getting. To me, I don't know that the general public quite understood the energy intensivity with growing when they said yes to the vote of like, let's free the plant. And it's one of those things that is definitely needed. An education campaign is needed. There are fierce proponents of indoor agriculture because that's what they've known. And there's certain places that do need to do it to bring clean herb to the people. But this plant is only inside or ran inside because of fear. It was fear of the helicopters seeing it. It was fear of like the inclement weather. And in some places, like I say, it's warranted. So it's a decision that needs to be made by the, I think, the consumers. And that's why an eco rating would be really cool. But like, this ripples through all sorts of packaging and consumer packaged goods and products that we have a potential to buy. There should be an eco rating on almost everything, to me.
Absolutely.
Well, and you don't even think about it whenever you're going in to make a purchase. I mean, it's not like the packaging says that this is indoor cannabis. You're not even seeing that. Now, if it's sun-grown, I tell people all the time, you'll know if it's sun-grown because they're going to put it on the packaging. Everybody else is going to let you think whatever you want to think so that you buy their flower.
It's funny, too, because the buyers really, like, what we're working on is what's called faker weed, and it's like the highest end outdoor can be sold as depth sun-grown. Or indoor sun grown. Yeah, exactly. And the depth fakers can go as indoor too. So all the buyers, they want things that will pass as indoor because that's the password to get the most money for your herb.
And that's also what's going to go fastest, be sold fastest.
Because of all these artists, again, all this like conditioning from like people that people respect, the influencers singing about Indo and singing about Hydro, even in the reggae world and stuff. It's like mystifying to me. And to me, it's a no-brainer that it's one of these educational things that I'm so surprised it hasn't hit like a viral, like you explain this to somebody and all of a sudden they're like, okay, well, let me try the sun grown. And if the sun grown matches up to some sort of quality, which we're tainted. We know that the best sun-grown in the world. So like to us, we haven't had the brown weed from Eastern Washington or Texas or any of these places. We've had good green bud from the get-go. And so sun-grown, we like feel like the entire process because we're part of it. And that's part of the education campaign too. It's a part of nature, not apart from nature, which like indoor stuck in a box. Like,
right, jail.
Yeah.
Plant jail.
It is.
Inmates. Well, we're out here in the sun growing harmoniously with the environment.
Yeah, where we were just watching the fog
rolling over the ridge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the south winds pick up a little and you can almost smell the coast coming in, but yet it's 85 degrees.
Yeah.
And sunny.
Well, and that's so going back to just stressing the amount of energy that's used to grow your flower or the type of soil that it's grown in or whatever, like all of these things, there's 1,000 different little nuances that give us our finished product. And we don't have an educated enough consumer base to really think that through. My analogy is like people are playing checkers, but it's a game of chess. So what are the things, the intelligent question that might even trip up a bud tender, but if we want this to change, we have to go in and use our voice. So, you know, you mentioned something that I thought was really clever about going in and asking about the flower that you're buying.
Yeah, Doug, our buddy from Bovada, came onto the mountain and he learned about full term and he learned about sun grown versus indoor. And then he went down to Santa Rosa and he went into the dispensary and he said, hey, you got any of that full term from the Emerald Triangle? And the manager was there and she tried to show him things that he was like, nope, that's not what I'm looking for. Not what I saw on the mountain.
Yep.
Then he said, and she tried to push him towards some indoor. And he said, well, if you can tell me how many kilowatt hours was used to make that eighth, I'll buy them all. he stumped her.
Yeah. And I mean, that's good. I want people to do that. I want people to go in and ask for a specific farm. Like, I'm looking for Can of Country number 26. Like, ask for what you want, because a lot of times, you're right, the shelf space has just been reserved.
That's funny you said that, because my mom just went into a local dispensary that holds my product, and she said, do you have any of that Can of Country? And the bud tender was like, yeah, we have some. It's over there. That was it. They didn't have any more conversation about it or education. They didn't try and sell her on it. They were just like, yeah, it's over there. So it really comes down to the education comes from the bud tender. If you get a bud tender that's really there for the cause, you're going to be talking about everybody's farm. But if they're just there because they like that one strain and that's what they're going to push, then that's what they're there for.
And there's such turnover in the dispensaries, it's hard to keep staff. And so when you've got just these big MSOs that have the marketing budget to send people in to do demos once a week, that's the stuff everybody's going to know about.
Yeah, true. Yeah, we don't have time to do that on the farm.
No.
We're kind of busy.
No, we'll have to get brand ambassadors, smoke our weed. And
yeah, it's just, a sticky wheel out there for sure.
Yeah. I've been told you have to send, what was the quote? For every pound that they get, you need to send 50 to 100 promos, meaning like pre-rolls or something for the bud tenders. This was from a guy who ran a dispensary, and he was trying to tell me what would make it work. And then when he told me the price, because their tiers are not based on quality, it's based on whether or not it was growing in the sun or growing indoors and all the different tiers, and their multiplier is 2.5, often a little more. Then he was trying to tell me a price that would make it work that was less than actually the cost of goods here. So it's like, it was ridiculous. I don't know if the number will ever match up. And that's why we focused on things unique to us. And we do it with the pride and love that we do, is just to try to differentiate ourselves, to reach another echelon of what it is on the market.
And reach the people that really are looking for something different, that aren't just THC hunters. My analogy is, it's like college kids on a budget partying are going to buy whatever's on sale, natural ice, whatever beer they can get that's as cheap, that has the highest amount of alcohol, to get buzzed as cheap as possible. And that seems to be where the market is. But that's not just those people. That's just kind of what's getting promoted. And what we're hoping there's a market for are the 10 to 20% of the people that are past that, that are looking for things that they remember as a child, or a strain that was lost, or just enjoying something that's not known, not mainstream, because it tastes good, not because someone said you should go buy that.
So, discerning enough to recognize that it's about their user experience.
And for me, I have enjoyed for so long being able to share whatever cultivars I have with someone and be able to tell them a story, just like someone who's been to a vineyard and met the winemaker, you know, being able to describe the drive to this place and to then show them a almost black looking flower that's like, this was the most amazing shade of purple, you know, and just being able to talk somebody through that experience, it changes the experience they have smoking it and how they feel about it. You know, all of that stuff matters. And I feel like that just is gotten lost. We're making concessions way too often now to where like this industry is starting to lose its face.
Absolutely. Well, it is. So sun-grown is priced to sell. It's priced as cheap as it can, but people are still buying $85 eighths of indoor because someone, it's a hype thing because someone's rapping about it. But really, realistically, if you do want to find, you know, sun-grown quality, it's going to be affordable. So, you know, we're hoping that even though people aren't as educated as they should be yet, that they will be, and then they can also get a good deal on good medicine, you know, basically for them.
Well, and you say, saying that it's affordable, and I know a number of farmers, like you were just saying, the cost of goods is more than what they're trying to give me for this. And, you know, last year, I believe, was when, you know, people are selling $350 pounds. Are you kidding? Taxes or what? On a pound?
161. Yeah. I think it's rising. Maybe it's 164 by now.
So how do you reckon that? Like, you know, and once you're in a regenerative model, you shouldn't have a lot of input costs, right? Because all of that stuff is coming, you know, from your land or trade with other farmers for, you know, wood shavings or manure or whatever. But how has it been the last couple of years dealing with that? And
you want to take this one?
You mean lowering COGS is the biggest thing right now. It's a skeleton crew, and it's a family farm around here. And so it's been really important to raise quality and lower the cost of goods. And so like refining what the nutrient management plan looked like was big. And so Dirty Business Soil did the recommendations and lowered the price that usually the nutrients do cost. And that was really good.
Oh, that was amazing. Did a great job. Really kept everything very green for us.
And what is the name of this company?
Dirty Business Soil in Arcata. Both great ladies up there. And they're really helping systematize the data collection and helping with all sorts of reports, reporting what we put in as far as teas go and top dressings and all our inputs and even the scouting logs and stuff. And so it's been in the vein of getting a true understanding of what the cost of goods is and making the efficiencies as high as possible.
So with this company, can you share your like soil testing or whatever and
They do recommendations based on the soil test. They're not the lab anymore, but they're the recommendations based on the lab numbers.
Nice.
They do leaf analysis as well and put together integrated pest management programs as well. Mm-hmm. So they're like all aspects of the cultivation process.
Yeah, definitely. From ground up.
Yep.
And so everything they do, it's all natural, you know, no salts, that kind of thing.
It's a good question. I know that they knew we're organic, so like they may have tailored it, but I can't say that they are dogmatic in that approach.
True.
I wouldn't doubt it, but I just don't know.
I'm sure they could work with whatever you want to work with as well. Like if you're a salt person, they could probably recommend that. But knowing that we were organic, that they gave us that solution.
Yeah. You know, people just constantly are putting Band-Aids on things in life in general. But, you know, especially farming, I feel like it's what I've seen growing up on a ranch and it being the big ag version. It's like everything is a Band-Aid. And so being able to really understand your soil, it's actually getting to the root of the problems that happen in farms. And I just feel like that changes the whole game. I mean, sure, you still have Mother Nature to contend with, but at least you're setting yourself up for success.
Exactly. Yeah. So much is in the setup. And then it's expressive. Like this plant expresses exactly what you give or don't give it.
Setup and maintenance, yep. Really. This cues, we get the good setup, but that doesn't mean it's going to work for every plant all the way through. So now we got to keep an eye on it and adjust accordingly. So there's maintenance involved, but for the most part, it's, you know, it's straightforward.
All right. So now that just made me think about your setup here. So you have number 26 in this one
garden one.
Has it been in other places and now it's landed there and that's where it's staying? Like, have y'all tested out the different bed and hoops?
Well, we've had it in garden two as well, and we have it in hoops as well. So it's all over the place.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been all over the farm here.
Okay. So then at the end, when y'all harvest all this stuff, then you can compare from each of those.
Yep. And that's what Colin did last year was a test of the indoor.
That's how we found the longer term sun grown versus the shorter term plant had a huge difference in the terp profile.
Okay. Sun grown one, obviously.
Full term sun grown took, yes, by 40% more terps than the younger plant that was also sun grown, but just a much smaller, younger plant, like 2.5 months versus, you know, 4 months.
Not in native ground, in an engineered bag mix.
Well, that's a three-year-old bag mix, though.
Yep.
Too.
All right. See, that stuff's fascinating. Would you have those, the PDF of those that I might be able to share in the show notes, just so people can see?
Somewhere. Yeah, I would have it somewhere. I'd have to check it out.
It's just like the proof's in the pudding. Like if we have the data just side by side, this is what it looks like. You can't argue with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean the testing data? I was thinking all the way down to the soil testing data. But yeah, the terp tests, we have those.
Yep. Yeah. And the more data, the more it'll get confirmed or not. Like there's questions always, but like this was just the first test that put a big question mark on things.
So what are you excited about this year, or what's on your mind right now as y'all are getting ready to harvest everything?
It's a good time of year. Yeah, we've planted later than ever. We've got smaller plants than ever, and our quality control is at 100% right now. So we've got a manageable crop this year that we're going to get the best of the best out of it. And it doesn't matter how many pounds, it's how much quality we can really get out of the square footage that we have. With, of course, the yield, but it's not so much yield, it's so much quality. So we're excited about the quality. Working with my kids all year, working with Reg, it's just great at the end of the year to sit back and look at the work that you've done. Here it all comes down to this moment, you know, and enjoy it because it's almost over. It's a couple weeks of like smiles and high fives just because we made it through the year. And then it turns back into work. Harvest time, curing, drying. We're really big on the drying and curing process because you can grow really good herb, but there's very few people that know how to cure it and store it and dry it correctly. So there's a lot that goes into it after it's all like harvest. Woo! All right, we're done. We're not done.
Yeah, not even close.
We're far from done.
So what are your tips or tricks for drying and curing?
Well, I'm a blue belt in jiu-jitsu, and one of the black belt's sayings is you can't teach everybody everything you know. So some things have to be held secret.
Moisture management, just like the whole part of the process. This whole dance with the plant from the seed to the herb to every part of it is moisture management. And staying within your bounds and not locking it up too wet and not opening it if you do lock it up too wet. It's like a surefire way to lock in too much moisture and brown your stuff out. Like, that's number one.
Is there something for someone who's just at home and where you can check the moisture levels, some sort of meter?
Water activity meter, but they're about $2,000. It's just as easy for a home person to add a Boveda, because it keeps it within 58 to 62, whatever their preferred is, to add some sort of moisture pack, humidity pack. For the home grower, that's easier than worrying about where it's at. But really, you smoke it, you feel where it's at, you like put it in containment, you open it up if you're a home grower at some point, like earlier on, to see if like much moisture has come out of the inside of the bud. And then you keep it where you want it. And you don't let it dry out too much. You don't let it get too moist. But it's better to let it dry out a little if you're worried about color more than too moist.
Depends on where you are and what your weather is and where you have things stored and how it's stored and what it's stored in. There's a lot of factors.
Curing has been oftentimes a very intensive process. But I remember for years curing it, like locking in a little more, starting the cure by putting it in containment a little early. And then opening it, and it would smell like the curing smell, I called it, a little different. I would leave it open in a dry environment till it smelled like that flower that I wanted again, and then I would close it back up. But it was an everyday affair sometimes. At the beginning, it was like 2-3 times if I had a lot of moisture in there.
Yeah, it really depends on your moisture that you, when you contain it, of what happens after that.
And you have a wonderful facility for drying. I remember there constantly being just like some air blowing through. You had fans going. So is having that air movement in the room important?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're going to bring in fresh herb into your room. You're going to raise your humidity. And so having the air flowing is going to equalize that humidity with what's in the room. And then also like using the outdoor environment to help increase flow. And also shutting it up when it's moist outside to keep what's dry inside dry. And then just constantly checking in on it with the weather. This morning was 99% humidity. So until about 11 o'clock, the sun didn't come out. So now we're changing the hours that we open the doors and get the air flowing in there. And so it's just constant balance with Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm. Are y'all doing any testing on how you're letting the flower age? Like, say, let's keep talking about Canna Country 26. Like, do you have some that you've had for a couple of years where you test?
We do. We have some antique and some vintage, and they hold up really well. For purple strain, typically it'll turn brown as it gets aged, And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. But the 26 really holds up on the color, and the nose is also there. Really does preserve well. Mm-hmm. And the Terps are just, they scream off of it still.
Well, and I ask that because there are certain cultivars that I have, and then I love them so much, I don't want to be without it. So I probably have about 50 different cultivars, and some of them may only have one bud left in that jar, but I just like start at the bottom and pull off whatever I need to have one small bowl of it. And, you know, I don't get to test the stuff I have. It's just, you know, you smoke it. But I'm curious if you tested it and you were able to see how the cannabinoids and terpenes were evolving.
I think human testing is even better. The user experience. How was the user experience, you know? We have seen the harvest point as we were talking, and the way it was growing having a huge effect on terpenes, and we know that. And even some effect on the cannabinoids. But that could be a product of the testing and them not being totally on as well. Because, like, it's tough to keep things totally consistent on that level.
Absolutely.
But the 26, in fact, has a way of preserving itself. It reminds me of a old strain that's back in its lineage on the male side, known as the HP13 on Maui. It was from Colorado to New York, where it was kind of famous in New York around the late 90s and early 2000s, and then it was on Maui since then. And it was just one of those strains, no matter if it was indoor, outdoor, if you tried to mess it up, if you sat on it, if you left it in a hot car, a year down the line, you open it up, and it was the pee. It was the pee. It was just, and I've looked at a test now, and the HP13 had high osamine as well, which is like the question has been, where did this osamine come from? And it must have just stroked something from like on both sides of the equation, or it brought something out, because the pea was a very hard flavor to lock down in the crosses, especially because it got crossed with the Maui flavor, and that Maui terpenolene limonene is really dominant, and that didn't show up in this selection of the 26, but the osamine did. And the
it did without the terpenolene, which is usually connected, so it's kind of hard to taste the osamine when it's combined with either, was it terpenolene that it was
No, I don't.
Or beta-caryophyllene?
I don't think. Beta-caryophyllene is the number two in the 26. Right. And that's where the flavor similarity to the Tange or to the forbidden fruit is the beta-caryophyllene and the limonene. But in this one, depending again on which edition it is, linalool was the third highest terpene at times, and right, limonene at other times.
SC Labs was saying to us, I think Alec was saying, that there are some strains with osamine in it, but this one was so dominant by itself.
Six times higher than beta-caryophyllene.
That was the rare part of it.
Yep. Like,
osamine's not that rare. The spike of its own is rare.
Yeah, and less than 1% of their tests was dominant in osamine.
Exactly. So that flavor, you know, could be in there, but it's dominated by a different terp, so you don't really get it out like the 26. So we're not sure exactly what that osamine tastes like, you know, exactly, because there's so many flavors in the 26 that it's hard to pinpoint. What does osamine taste like? I don't really know. To be honest, we know with some similarities because the number three has it in it as well. And you can kind of taste this sweetness and a little of the osamine, which must be the osamine is what I'm connecting. But, you know, it's kind of a mystery still.
Yeah, I wish I had a terpene wheel in front of me right now. Because I'm like, what is osamine supposed to taste like?
Floral, woodsy. A little fruity.
A little spicy.
Yep. To me, it reminded me of the Jamaican lilikoi, we call it on Maui, which is known as bell apple a lot of the world in Jamaica, for instance. And it's the velvet lilikoi, and it's not as sour as the passion fruits that are the yellow and the purple passion fruit. It's a peach-colored skin, kind of fuzzy, and it just nails that. And I looked up the terpenes of the bell apple, and osamine was in there, beta-osamine, in fact.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
One of the things that when I am smoking with someone and they open a jar of something and then they just leave it out, leave it open, smoking. And I'm just like, no, get that lid back on that jar. You know, I think there's so much that we don't do once we get the cannabis home with us to really preserve the quality of the terpene profile.
Yeah, take out what you use and put the rest away.
Immediately.
Or for the next time you roll or get a bong toke or whatever. But yeah, you treat it as you're storing it. So you want to store it, but take out what you're going to use and use it. Put it away. That's your best bet for getting your quality and keeping your moisture and keeping your terps alive, is just taking care of it once you have it.
And I keep everything in glass jars. I like to have the, you know, the dark ones, but if I don't, I keep everything in wine boxes. Right. So my glass jars are in a wine box. So it's like, you know.
Yeah, dark and cool is what you want to find a good home for it.
Well, hopefully I'll find a good home for some of your flower before I leave. Well, is there anything that we didn't talk about that really sets Canna Country apart that you want to highlight?
Something? Well, these days, probably the breeding. Because like we kind of touched on it and we did some theme breeding and we just did a bunch of feminized seeds because that's what, especially for home gardeners and people who want to grow their own and commercial farmers, everybody wants feminized stock these days. Amen. So they don't have to pull males. Yeah. I know everyone can love a female.
Well, and it's hard to sex something when, you know, I mean, there's been a few things that my sister and I were growing there where they were hermaphrodites. It's like, wait a minute, is this female? Male? Nope. Those look like balls. Like, what's happening here? Yep. You know, and so,
you hope you see that early, not later.
Right. So it's just one of those things where, yeah, please take that guesswork out for me. I just want my challenge to be growing it.
Yep. Well, you could still end up with some herms on a feminized seed. Just depends on who you bought it from and what they're doing with it.
And how stable those genetics are. Like if it's something that had a low threshold for environmental stress that would make it herm, then it's like you're using the wrong one. And what I've been seeing is it's often if your donor is solid, it's often more about the female, that whether or not she is solid. So even if something's not a herm, like I've seen some things with chem in it that like chem's got herm in its background and a portion of those
stressed out
turned herms. Okay. Yeah. But it's the environment they're being grown in often is so different than the environment they were seeded in or really tested in. And that's a big difference.
I think that may have been, that's probably what our issue is.
Yeah, it's so unique, yeah, your environment.
Could totally be, yeah, that hot days, hot nights, yeah. Might just be stressing it out.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing you can do about that. I mean,
switch
where I am, you just got to get it.
Get a different strain, try a different thing. See if you find the one that works there.
Yeah.
That's kind of part of the project.
And if there was an event that gave rise to it, you can pick the balls off sometimes and it will not continue to herm. Sometimes they will continue to herm if they're just a herm, for instance.
Sometimes they won't open and pollinate. Sometimes they'll just be a banana.
Yeah. Or sterile, like a lot of sativas.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. I mean, it's one of those things where when, you know, you're not growing very many, it's just like, fuck it, get it out of here. But that would be interesting to try that experiment.
Yep. So we did, we used one donor of our number 30 was a donor for breeding, and she is very lime green, really high in alpha pinene, limonene, and beta pinene, and like grows like a faceted diamond, really. She's hard, lime green, and resilient, and is very unique in the way that she's dominated by alpha pinene. So we chose some of the really lime green ones that we run, like the number 9, our highest THC, and we did kind of a lime green high THC batch as one of the crossbreeds. And we did the blueberry or grape nose that's really easy to lock down in those terpenes. That's a kind of a dominant terpene category or flavor profile. I should say we did that with a bunch of the different blueberry crosses together. And
some OG crosses with those as well. And so we kind of had our patterns of different flavors that we were crossing into.
So the limes, because, you know, the alpha and beta pinene, those are like my focus weed. what happened with those? How did they turn out?
Well, we've harvested the seeds and now we're to shuck them. And then the next thing will be to do stability testing before we get them out. But that was the theme, was lime green in color, not flavor, but lime greenies.
We have the 30 that we have. The original, yep. Which is the number 30.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing that when we first started talking and you were saying, you know, if you're not growing the flavor of the month, you've been kind of screwed before. And when I first moved to California, I guess that was 9 years ago, it was more of a, you know, green and gassy phase than move into a purple phase. And I feel like pinks are a thing now. And so it has been an interesting journey just being here and seeing how that's changed. But for me, I smoke what feels good. I don't give a shit what everybody else thinks cool.
Right.
But when you're just going into a dispensary, you...
Yeah, it's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And so if you have something that you can know that you like and you go, oh, okay, well, do you have that? You know, you're going to get close to what you want. But if you go in there and... looking for something new, I always go in and I know what I already like from this farm, but I'm going to look around and see what else I can find from another farm that's close to that. And if I can't find it, I always go back to that farm. So hopefully people do the same.
Are y'all doing any collaborations with the other small farmers in the area? Like, what are y'all doing around here to kind of help and support each other through this crazy phase?
Oh, good question.
Bringing each other's herb to the show, really trying to get them in places.
We're all helping each other. We had a meeting down south with the Woods, Woody Harrelson's dispensary, and we went down with a team of farmers, and we all repped each other. So then that's the way it works with our community, is like we're all struggling and we're all trying to find some angle, but we're all bringing each other with us. So we're going there with 5 to 7 farms that are all the same quality with the same principles and the same mindset that we're going there with. And we're shopping their stuff and they get an opportunity to talk to someone, they're shopping our stuff. And so it's been great to bring the community back together and get back to our roots. A lot of us were so busy, so wrapped up in the more game, trying to keep up with the demand, that now that demand's, it's everywhere. Now we're back to just what brought us here in the first place, which is just all our community helping each other and coming up with things, doing things that we like to do and growing strains that we like, because that's always been there. That's what got us here in the first place.
Yeah. Now, what about the family angle? Because you have 2 sons that are...
Yeah, my mom started me off when I was young, just introduced me. It was never for her. She always had a job. It wasn't her main job, and it was just something she loved to do. And she had a few plants in the garden, but she helped me fall in love with this plant. And now I have 2 boys, and so we're a 3rd-generation farm. We have 3 generations working on this farm. To see the boys, to think about my kids, seeing the whole, they've really seen the whole thing. I mean, not really my childhood, but they've seen it go from like this big demand, this big thing, into like what it is now, a survival mode. And they're as passionate about it now as ever. So to see that, it really, you know, hits home, and it just shows what kind of character we are up here. Like, no matter what, we're all about family and quality and fishing and farming. Yeah.
When we talked before and you mentioned having to have that tough conversation with the boys of like, you know, who knows how long we get to do this?
Yeah, it's an awful conversation to have. Like, but it came down to working with Reggie and asking my kids if this is what they wanted to do, and getting the feedback from them that's like, we want to do this. We want to make it work. We're really going to try our best this year. Or are we taking the year off? Or are we done all together? And so to have them support our family by putting it out there and working every day and not knowing if they're getting paid, doing it because they love it, and they want to succeed, and they want to continue doing what they're doing. It's been a really emotional time for me, because I've always been able to, like, it's going to be okay. I'll make it work. To now, I don't know if I can make it work. I don't know if this is going to work at all. What do you guys want to do this or not? You know, so it's been quite the adventure going from, you know, a successful farm to watching the whole market just fall apart and not having the future be very certain, and having my kids being able to express that they still want to try, like, that's amazing to me.
That is amazing. And I'm fifth generation on my family's ranch in West Texas, and I went home to help, you know, because I'm like, this is important to me. I don't want us selling more land. I want to help me figure out what I can do to help us. And having a very different conversation with my family of, you know, them just being old and being done and just not wanting my help.
Yeah.
And so that was tough.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I'm just like, well, I guess I just have to wait for people to die to then have a chance of maybe doing something. Like, that feels terrible.
Yeah.
Like, I would want to do it with my dad. So,
right.
I'm thrilled to have met your boys and to know that y'all all want to do this together. I mean, shit, this is emotional for me talking about it.
Yeah.
But that's fucking hard that yep. this is what you do.
Yeah.
This is your livelihood.
This is our life. This is, and we're bringing the best of the best to people. And then, you know, it's just hopefully a matter of time before they see that.
Yeah.
But that's been the struggle.
Yeah. And educated consumers, the most powerful thing that we have to fix
yep.
this, right? You know,
word
right
of mouth
the
is the most powerful marketing. And I know that once people try this herb, they're going to tell somebody else about it. It's just a matter of time. But the struggle's been trying to get it out to the people, which has just really been like a challenge, the hardest challenge. And, you know, we're up against big corporate money. And so we're just little homebody farmers that know what the hell we're doing, and we know how to grow efficiently, and we know how to grow with nature. And it's just a struggle to get it to this point and then have it not go forward.
Yeah.
You know?
So yeah, if people want to find Canna Country, support Canna Country, you know, be a megaphone in their own communities, how can they find you?
We're working on websites where we do have some local dispensaries with our product in it. There's some down south. We're really scattered out, and we're trying to get it all to a point where we have a website that shows all of our strains, our plant, you know, and our gear and data involved, and then kind of branch out from there. But right now, really, if you want to find Canna Country, it's sort of tough. You're kind of have to be in my neck of the woods. In Humboldt is where we have the majority of our flower. We're in Joe's Pot Shop, the Cannabis Country Club, Sartori Wellness, Proper Wellness, and the Heart of Emerald. And then I think the Woods, and there's a couple other dispensaries.
Herba.
Yeah. Down
now,
south.
This opens up an excellent invitation then when you're traveling, when you're choosing your holiday destination, you know, consider traveling to the Emerald Triangle. This is one of the most beautiful places on earth.
Definitely mysterious.
And you can have a one-of-a-kind experience and try some of the best cannabis in the world. Like, that's a reason to go visit a place. And then you get to bring that home and have that conversation just like you would, you know, popping a cork on a bottle of wine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I actually have an Airbnb in Shelter Cove that I just got on Hi-B&B. So it's kind of like promoting Canna Country in a way as well.
Yeah.
So come to the Lost Coast and here's your package of flavors, and have a great time.
I love it. And with Casually Baked, I have an invitation all the time for people to fill out a travel form. Tell me what you like, where you want to go, and I'll be your tour guide.
Like, awesome.
I'm always down for a good road trip. Like, yeah. Where are we going?
Well, we got trails around here, lots of trails. Lost Coast, 25 miles. We got the Avenue of the Giants. I mean, it's just a beautiful place to be.
Yes, it is. And thank you so much for sharing part of your Sunday with me, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Yay. Thanks for coming up.
Yes, certainly. Now let's go walk through the garden.
Yes.
Awesome. My favorite.
I hope this conversation inspires you to travel all the way to Northern California to purchase full-term flower from Canna Country and other small family farms. Cannabis tourism might be the only thing that keeps these legacy farms afloat. So keep that in mind when you're choosing your next vacation spot. And if you're already planning some girls' trip or celebration in wine country, level up the experience with a private tour of weed country. I'd love to be your host and cannabis lifestyle guide. So head over to the podcast 234 show notes at casuallybaked.com to learn more. As always, if you want to connect or collaborate, email your messages, requests, or canna curious questions through the website or DM me on social. When I'm there, I'm at Casually Baked on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, the WeedTube, and Truth Social. However you decide to support our highly responsible cannabis movement, thank you for doing your part to Puff Puff, pass
this
it on.
Is a high time. We had a high time together.
Casually Baked, the podcast, was created, recorded, and produced by yours truly. Editing and sound design are in the capable hands of Jamie Humiston at PodConnects. The podcast theme music is by my highly talented friend Seth Walker. If you aren't familiar with Seth's music, you can find High Time on his album Gotta Get Back, wherever you're buying your music these days. I know he didn't create High Time for me, but it sure as shit sounds like he did, right? I hope you'll tune in next time. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, my name's Kate, and I'm your host of the Pot Moms Podcast. I started the Pot Moms Podcast, well, because I wanted to end the stigma against using cannabis, specifically with moms, but also anyone who chooses to consume. I strive for a balance of humor and education, along with some pretty rad guests, to help combat social biases that come with consuming cannabis. Kids are hard. Join me for regular podcast episodes packed with parenting hacks, real-life stories, and of course, my favorite cannabis products. The days are long, but the years are short. So roll another J and take a deep breath. Keep blazing and stay amazing.